racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Hi, and welcome, and thanks for joining us in the Grow Room with Bob and Jay. We can be found on all your favorite digital platforms, so please just hit that subscription button. Even though the tour has added a record 11 fall tournaments, it still feels to me as though we should be just ending the season, not starting it. And I want to get my man Jay Randolph Jr.'s opinion on that. How do you feel?
Well, I'm kind of betwixt and between, if you will. I'm certainly enjoying what we're seeing and what we're going to talk about, Bob, with these players that have had a lot expected of them and are now reaching their promise and making, you know, big statements on the PGA Tour with victories. It is a little odd. This is earlier than they did last year. So, you know, obviously the money was there in terms of having the events. And guys are playing. This week we got Justin Thomas in the field. Guys are picking and choosing their schedule. But each week that goes by, you know, somebody gets that two-year exemption. Somebody gets the trip with you and Janice to Kapalua. You know, this is still professional golf at the highest level.
Speaking of that event in Maui, it just felt so right in years past when we would arrive at Maui. It was the first event of the year. I mean, there was a real sense of excitement and buzz about it. And you go there now and it's already deep into the schedule. It just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Well, it still is for a lot of those guys that are in the field. But, you know, so many of the other players that have won an event play three or four events in the fall. Because if you don't, you could put yourself behind the eight ball a little bit. I mean, now with 11 events in the fall, if you don't play, you know, that's 11 events you're missing out on. Cash and FedEx Cup points, and at this point, FedEx Cup points are more important.
Boy, you bring up a great point there, Jay. You just can't sit out, even though it would be ideal to spend some family time to get away from the game, maybe really break down your swing and rebuild it before starting out. But there's no such thing anymore. It's the end of 2019. A week later or so, it's the beginning of 2020.
Yeah, you know, you look back, Bob, you remember how that off season, you know, was when guys would sign new club deals. That's when they'd start maybe making a couple of swing changes or adjustments. I think that's a tremendous point that you make. Now you have to kind of do it in the midst of what's going on, and that may put you in a little bit of a slump, if you will, or what appears to be a slump when you're really working on something that may take you to a higher level. And as we both have talked about throughout this past year, guys are still navigating what events they want to play, what are right for them, what golf courses do they want to play, how much do they want to go overseas. It's still an evolving process, but I think it was rewarded with a successful tour championship and a pretty good major season. So 2020 has got a lot to live up to.
Yeah, it certainly has. And part of the excitement that is being generated by these early tournaments, quite frankly, is the fact that there's a new PGA Tour champion, it seems like, every week. And last week, Sebastian Munoz, he won the Sanderson's Farm Championship. And now he's currently leading the FedEx Cup standings. I mean, I need help. I need help. I mean, how can you keep track of all this while it's going on? It has my head spinning.
No, and I understand that. And I think for a lot of people, you know, they looked at that leaderboard on Saturday or Sunday morning, and it probably wasn't something they said, boy, I got to find a TV to tune in. But for people like you and I and others that listen to shows like this, you know, you had M there You had on, you had Carlos Ortiz, who's got the relationship with Sebastian Munoz. And we know, I mean, those four guys that we mentioned have a chance to be in the top 50 in the world for the next 5 or 10 years. I mean, that's what I think that's the difference that we're seeing now. And this is no offense to my man Mark Carnevale or Mark Wiebe, or I mean, we could go Brad Bryant or whomever when they got that first victory, or maybe their only victory on the PGA Tour. It was a different time. There aren't guys like that anymore. There aren't Jay Delsings out there. And that's no offense to the guys that Bob and I love. Like he talked about John Adams last week. I mean, it's for a lot of us, we've got to, you know, understand that's what we've got now. And these guys, they just come out firing and ready to go. And a big part of it is that Korn Ferry Tour. I mean, virtually all the guys we're seeing winning had success on the Korn Ferry Tour. You know, and when you start adding them up, Matthew Wolf, Morikawa, Adam Long, even though Hovland hasn't won, you know, and now Munoz and Ortiz, and who knows who we're going to see this week.
Yeah, it's gotten to the point where maybe it's only 50-50 that the next winner is going to come from the USA. The PGA Tour certainly has gone global, which they wanted to do. Why don't we give a listen now to what Munoz had to say after his victory?
You know, I'm so thrilled to be here and to be the champion. I always will have a special connection to Jackson, Mississippi, because this was the first event I ever played as a PGA Tour member back in 2016. So, you know, it's just one of those places that I'll just cherish, and this moment just add on to that, and I will always be grateful to this city, and so just really happy and blessed to be here. So, yeah, I mean, I was, whenever they were done the trophy ceremony, I just kept smiling to myself, reminding me, oh, yeah, Hawaii's around the corner. Oh, yeah, Masters. Like, you know, like, oh, yeah, I got job security for a couple more years more. Like, it's just like, you know, I just, like, smile, come back to, and then smile again. It's just, it hasn't set, but I'm fully aware of the perks of being a PGA Tour winner, and I'll carry that forever.
Bob, I referenced earlier that Carlos Ortiz, I played with him at North Texas State University, I think just outside of Denton. When Ortiz started having success, it boosted Munoz's confidence. These guys feed off each other, like we saw a couple of years with the relationship with Jordan Spieth and JT. And Munoz traveled to the tournament with Joaquin Niemann. The three of those guys play a lot of practice rounds together. And when you compete with a guy and feel like you can go heads up with him, and that guy wins the tournament, you start thinking, hey, where's my trophy?
Jay, the advice that Niemann passed on to Munoz, it really solid. I mean, you wouldn't expect it from somebody that young, but he really has his head wrapped around the PGA Tour. He told this to Munoz, at PGA Tour level, you have to play to win. Risk a part of winning at this level, and boy, if you're not willing to put your foot out there and test that water, you're not going to win.
Well, and you know, there was a time, Bob, you know, if a guy had a 4 or 5 shot lead on the rest of the field, the rest of that field was starting to think about money position. Because, you know, for some of them, they were playing week to week to pay the bills. And, you know, they wanted to hold their position. And it made them maybe a little bit less aggressive. I think now that theory of you have to play to win starts on the Korn Ferry Tour. Hell, it might even start on the HAGA Tour. I wish I'd have had the mindset of these young kids. And I think there were some people during the time I played that did have that mindset. The Phil Mickelsons, the Jim Furyks, those guys. But this is, it's fascinating. It really is fascinating to see what's going on with the PGA Tour. And then as we head into the major championship season next year, how will these guys do now that they've got a victory? Are they more apt to compete well in a major? There's a lot of questions.
Well, from that little conversation, I just heard Jay Randolph openly admitting it's something that I thought was gospel in talking to players that competed against Jay. He had plenty of stick in the bag, just maybe not that killer instinct to win. I'm not being harsh by saying that,
no.
Am I, Jay?
I you know what? There. I got to my junior year in college, and I looked at Brett Quigley, who had won the U.S. Junior Amateur Champ, and somehow found a way to get that ball in that hole a lot of times, a couple of shots better than me. And, you know, I think for me it was two things. I had a killer instinct. I just didn't want to work hard enough. And, you know, that's easy to say now. I don't think I'd have agreed with it back then. But, I mean, these guys that we're seeing have been laying the foundation for a long, long time. You know, we don't see the blood, sweat, and tears. We just see the pretty wife and trophy and the beautiful kids and the flowers and all that stuff. We don't see the 5:30 to 9 o'clock in the morning beating balls stuff.
Well, you bring up a great point as we swing across the pond, Jay Randolph Jr., to the BMW PGA Championship. Lo and behold, Danny Willett won the Masters in 2016. Really struggled after that. I mean, he got down to 462 in the world, and now he's all the way back up to 31st in the world, and probably issued quite a statement to Padraig Harrington that, hey, I want to be at Whistling Straits later this year. I want to represent Europe in the Ryder Cup.
To me, this might be as fascinating as what's going on with the tour with the young guys. I mean, Danny Willett was on the milk carton, lost after he won the Masters, and I don't blame him. I think a lot of that affects you in a lot of different ways. I mean, he fell off the face. He really did. When you go to 462 in the world rankings and you won the Masters just a couple of years ago, this is great. And he's obviously been really committed. I follow his beautiful wife on Twitter, and she's always talking about his commitment. And I know you're a big fan of his, Bob. And, you know, this is a total resurgence. What does the future hold for Danny Willett? Is he a guy that's going to be a double major guy after nobody thought he'd win, you know, another tournament again? So this is big.
Yeah, big win for Danny Willett. And right now, I'd like to offer condolences to the family of Walker Wood, a name that you're probably not familiar with, but he has been the green superintendent at St. Andrews for the last 30 years. So you can imagine the quality of the job that he would be doing, that they would keep him for 30 years. Congratulations, job well done. Now it's on to the next event on the calendar, the Safeway Classic, Silverado Resort in Napa, California. Plenty of wine there.
Yeah, we do just fine. We do very well at Silverado, you and I. Seth Curry, you got a little athletic flavor here. Seth Curry is playing in the Pro-Am with Phil Mickelson. Nice to see Phil playing here. This might be his lone event in this kind of fall season. I don't know that he'll go over to the Far East. And Curry is getting into the golf business with a new clothing line. Also, Bob, not in the Pro-Am. This is in the real deal. Former quarterback and now fantastic announcer, Tony Romo, has a sponsor's invitation to play, and he'll be paired with young gun Bo Hostler.
Now, a couple of Texas connections there, and interesting to note, CBS didn't leave many details in the event that Tony Romo makes the cut, highly unlikely for sure, but in the event that he does and has to play Saturday and Sunday, Boomer Esiason is slotted to take the color role on the weekend. So I think probably the person rooting the most for Tony Romo to make the cut, besides Tony Romo, maybe the Boomer.
Francesco Molinari is playing. It's the first time playing this event. Bryson DeChambeau, and defending champion who got his first PGA Tour victory here a year ago to join his dad as a PGA Tour winner, Kevin Tway. I mentioned Justin Thomas, Brant Snedeker, another first-timer. in Jim Furyk, and this will be a pretty good pairing. Phil, get to see a little of that youth invasion that we've talked about. Colin Morikawa, Patrick Cantlay, and Phil Mickelson.
A couple of other guys worth mentioning, Jade John Daly, Pat Perez, Johnny Vegas, Harold Warner the third, Harold Varner the third, and Nick Watney. Something tells me Nick Watney's going to have a big year this year. I can't put my finger on it, but hopefully he does. He really is a good guy. Speaking of good people, Jay Randolph Jr., nobody any better than Barbara Nicklaus, and she is to receive the 2019 PGA Distinguished Service Award. That's going to take place November 5th at the PGA of America's 103rd annual meeting. What can we say about Barbara Nicklaus that hasn't already been said?
I think the question would be, why hadn't she won the award already? I mean, she has truly been one of the great ambassadors. What she's done for healthcare and hospitals down in the South Florida area, let alone from being a classy lady, a fantastic mom, and wife to the greatest golfer of all time. And I think she had a giant impact. And I know Jack would tell you, she was a large reason why he's considered the greatest player of all time.
Well, all you have to do is go in that closet. Look at that whip. It's pretty well used. So we know Jack did get some direction. The beauty of it is, you know, the memorial out in Ohio, that's run by Jack Nicklaus. The Honda down in Florida, well, at the helm of that one is not Jack Nicklaus, but Barbara Nicklaus, and what a job she does. They've raised more than $100 million in the last 15 years. And on the subject of charity and giving back, it's our pleasure to bring you the chat Hale Irwin had with Jay Randolph Sr., that's Jay's dad, and well-known sports broadcaster. Not only about receiving the Payne Stewart Award, but about his career, his victories, the present-day golf equipment, and what advice he would give to the young players trying to make their way in professional golf. Stay with us. That's coming up next.
You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, and we're heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you could just ask your smart speaker Alexa, and you'll be connected.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at the Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
All right, welcome back to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. And Jay Jr., you know, your dad's coming up in just a moment with a great interview with Hale Irwin. How about a little bit of the background of Jay Randolph Sr., one of the most respected men ever to get behind a microphone?
Well, the old man turned 85, 13 over last week. He's still kicking, still goes to the racetrack about every week. Senior covered everything except women's field hockey. He covered the PGA Tour for NBC from 74 to 86. He did the Cardinal baseball games, did NFL football, Big 8 basketball, NCAA basketball. You could put him in just about any situation and say go, and he'd do it. And you know, that he was a reliable trooper, if you will, for NBC Sports, and then also hosted the nightly sports at 5, 6, and 10 in St. Louis for about 20 years, and a pretty good dad. So I'm lucky. And, of course, being in St. Louis, Bob, both Senior and Hale Irwin called it home base. So, you know, they got a great friendship.
Time now for two of the greatest guys ever involved in the sport of golf, Jay Randolph Sr. and Hale Irwin.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Our guest is a very special guest, Hale Irwin, one of my favorite golfers of all time and a gentleman who has stamped out a remarkable career. And first of all, congratulate you on winning the Payne Stewart Award given by the Southern Company. It's a well-deserved award. I'm sure you're thrilled to have it.
Well, absolutely. How deserving, I don't know, Jay. That's for somebody else to figure out. But you know, I really felt like when Tracy Stewart called me and informed me of the honor, I was taken back simply because I just feel like some of the things I've done, particularly in the charity area, just are representative of so many other people that have worked at least as hard, if not harder. You, for example, down at St. Louis Children's Hospital, boy, the staff, the doctors, the nurses, and all the people that work down there are so good. They're such fine people, and seeing the treatment those children get and seeing the smiles on these kids' faces. Of course, there's some very sad stories, but there's some overwhelmingly good stories, and that's what we try to focus on, is trying to help these kids have a better way of life. So honored, yes, very proud, not only for myself, but I think for at least all those people that are out there in the charitable communities that work so hard and getting the money that's needed for advanced care for not only kids, but veterans and our first responders, and it could go on and on.
Well, when I think of what you have done and children's there here in St. Louis, and of course, the Eisenhower Medical Center, which was Bob Hope's baby, and he raised so much money through his tournament, and Jack Nicklaus and Barbara with their hospital work in Florida as well as in Ohio. When you stop to think of it, it's really remarkable. The game of golf has generated so much money for charity to help people, and it just continues to grow and grow.
It does, and as you mentioned, the game of golf is really a lifesaver for some people. We have seen through the PGA Tour and the communities in which we play that the money that is raised via these tournaments is plowed back into those charitable endeavors is outstanding. I mean, it's just huge numbers, and it shows the value, I think, of golf in the marketplace, if you want to call it that. The fact that people can go out, enjoy a game of life, really, and use those life skills. You look at Steve programs, for instance, with the 9 core values and what these kids learn from life or from golf about life.
Well, and that is one of the tremendous items about the game of golf. You can play it for a long, long time with family and friends and with people who want to be involved in helping others with charity. It's really terrific. Hale, you know, I think something my dad once said to me many years ago, the only thing constant is change. And we certainly have had that be true in so many aspects of life and certainly in the aspects of professional golf. You know, there's a rough road to hoe today if you're a young man and want to try to get on the tour. There are a few ways you can do it, but it's gotten a great deal harder because there are a great many more people who want to play.
Well, there are. Being a professional golfer, whether you're a man or a woman, that's easy to get to be a professional. That's the easy part. Now, be successful, that's another thing altogether. The money has increased. The attention on that has increased. Social media has increased. The awareness factor is so much higher now. And a lot of these kids, unfortunately, are going out, I think, too soon. They're not finishing their college degrees. They're not doing the things they really need to do to prepare themselves for life because there's no guarantee they're going to make it in golf. And
right.
My advice to all these people that are considering it, stay in school, mature, get yourself a degree so you have something on which to fall back if you don't make it, because all it takes is that finger in a car door, stepping off a curb and breaking an ankle, you know, some of the things that can happen just so quickly that can negatively affect your golf career. You need something to fall back on. And I just hate to see these young people go out and waste their years because there is no guarantee. As you said, Jay, there's many, many good players out there. They're all vying for those few spots that are called success. And I've seen too many young people waste away their lives doing something that they love, yes, but they have to prepare for it in the proper way.
You would win 3 United States Opens, and everyone has a memory, of course, of Medina and what happened there in the playoff and everything. Would that be the highlight of your career, winning those 3 majors, or would it be something else that maybe we don't think of?
Well, honestly, yeah, the 3 Open wins are enormous feathers in one's cap, but were they the top? Well, they share that honor with perhaps my very first win as a pro. I remember that happening in the Thanksgiving time of November 1971. I was so delighted. I could not have been more pleased and more happy than what I was at the time. I go back to the NCAA tournament, proving myself that I could win with my peer group, at least my college peer group. What an exciting time that was. That was really the catalyst that got me into playing professional golf. So there are any number of victories out there that come as, how important are they? Well, they each have their chapter in the book. And I love the book. So I really can't pick the chapter that's best, but it would be a good bet to say that my first Open win was elevated me, at least in my mind, to the international stage. I could win on that stage. And then at Inverness 5 years later, it was sort of a, hey, I can still do it. And then, of course, the 1990 one was, it was just something kind of beyond belief. It was great fun, great effort. But experience came through there in the end and really pulled me through.
Yeah, one of the most memorizing victories that I ever can remember of anybody that I have ever covered. It was just absolutely fabulous. I wonder, you like what's going on today? I mean, we have this new split season this year, and apparently there's some things that the tour is going to be tweaking, but
I do think that this split season that the tour has is a bit confusing. I understand why they're doing it, but I don't say that I like it. But then they didn't ask me about it either, so my opinion doesn't really matter. I do think they tried to simplify it a bit with the scoring this year. It was still awkward. I think there's no way you can take the previous 11 months and 3 weeks and rationalize how you start the final tournament and make it seem equitable. But I thought it was much simpler this year. Instead of a bunch of points, here's the way it is. Maybe it's a little bit like NASCAR. You have the fastest racer, okay, he gets the pole position. Maybe that's the way it is. But I thought it was a good contest. But really, other than the top 5 or 10 players going into yesterday, the others really didn't have a chance. So
no.
I don't know. It
you'd like to see more of them maybe in the mix. Yeah, I would agree with that. Certainly, it's interesting. The Champions Tour continues to roll on and survive. Some people thought that when Trevino and Nicklaus and Palmer and Hale Irwin began to slip a little bit, it wouldn't, but it's still doing fairly well, as I can understand on TV, and it's still golf's greatest mulligan.
Well, it is. I hope that the players that will be, that let's say are 40 to 50 now, if they bring great credentials to the tour. I hope they play. They're going to bring a lot of money, so I don't think they're going to be financially driven to play the Champions Tour for money. If they still want to compete, still love to play, then that's the place for them. Unfortunately, when you look at the players coming up, while they're very, very good players, they don't have the pedigree that a Nicklaus did or a Covino or a player, you know, those players that you just mentioned, or Tom Watson. They don't have that following. Davis Love's a good example of a guy that had major championship victories and, you know, was a big winner on the regular tour. Well, he's opted to really kind of play very little on the Champions Tour, and we miss him. We need players like Davis Love.
Right.
At the same time, you have very qualified players, and I don't know what the answer is. I hope that golf will still maintain its viability. The popularity of the game is, like you say, Jay, is very strong right now. The Champions Tour is very strong. I just hope that the next 5, 10, 15 years, we can, you know, you and I can sit in our rocking chairs and tell our stories and say, yeah, it still is good.
Hale, you have, you know, done so much in your career, and I'm reminded at one point in time you were very busy designing golf courses. The golf design business has dried up a little bit, I think. It seems like we overbuilt maybe in the 80s and 90s. Are you still doing any architectural work?
Well, very little, Jay. Not the, for lack of want. We certainly want to, and I have more time to do it now. But as you say, whether it was overbuilt or whether the market just can't sustain it anymore, I think that the planned communities that we saw popping up all across the country when the 2007-08 recession time came along, those places were hit pretty hard. The discretionary time and money that people once had became a little more precious. And unfortunately, we've seen a downplay of the, at least if you look at some of the figures out there, golf is not played by as many people. But I think that's a strange definition, because sometimes golfers were called people that might play once a year. Well, you and I might not say those are golfers, but in the event that is the definition, yes, it has leveled off. But I think we're at a very healthy number. We're not seeing, at least at the professional level, we're not seeing sponsorships back off. We still see our pro-ams full. The club I belong to out here in Arizona, we have a backlog of at least 100 people waiting to get in. So, you know, some of the places that people look at and say, oh, that's not doing very well. Well, there may be reasons that are not just attached to golf. It may be something else.
Yeah, right.
But all in all, I think it's doing well. The design work, yes, it has slowed up considerably. A lot of architects that came out of the 80s and the 90s went to hang their own shingle. I think they're doing things now that would be more of a landscaping than an actual golf course design.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, Jack Nicklaus is great at players he's been, and wide spread as this design company is across the world, they're looking for jobs that they once had to throw away. Now they accept what they can get. It's a far-flung empire he's gotten. There's a lot of costs, and there's just not a lot of jobs out there for people to vie for now.
Yeah, that's right. I've got to ask you about the equipment today. We mentioned Nicklaus. Of course, he's been a champion of trying to standardize the golf ball for the professional level of players. And these scores that they're shooting, Hale, I mean, I can't, you know, I hear the announcers say, well, he's got a 9-iron here from 190 yards. it's mind-boggling what's happened to the game from an equipment standpoint.
Well, it is these young people now, and I throw people, not just the men, but the women too. They're so much fitter now than they used to be. Used to be in the old days that, you know, working out, lifting weights was not something that you did. But the they do that now, and they do it in a very vigorous way. That's part of their regimen. The equipment itself, you know, that 9-iron you speak of is probably a 7-iron in years past.
Right.
So now you say, well, a 7-iron still go 190 yards. Well, you got a golf ball now that probably travels at least 10 to 20 yards farther than it used to. So all of a sudden, you see the reason why they're hitting a 9-iron 190 yards. They are stronger. These are big people that are playing the game now. They're not small people. They're relatively big. They're strong. The women, too, you look at Justin Thomas. He's not a big man, but he comes off the ground. Ricky Fowler, they come off the ground. They hit the ball. Well, you took yesterday's equipment with the heads and the shafts and the golf ball that curved a little more and didn't compress quite like today's ball does. They wouldn't be coming off the ground. They'd be hugging the ground to keep the ball on the ground and not just hit it as high as they can. It's a whole different way the game is played now, and it encourages distance. Well, I do. The USGA, the governing bodies, really have to get their arms around the equipment because it's hard to find a golf course in these established golf courses that have a history that are capable of hosting even college-level tournaments because these kids hit the ball so far. And I think it's taking away from the history of our game, which is so very, very important to its vitality.
Watching you play over the years has been one of the great joys of my life.
Well, Jay, that's very kind of you. And as you well know, spending time with you has always been great fun. We've had a lot of good times together.
Hail everyone joining us here on Fairways and Greens. And thank you, Hail, and good luck. And that'll do it for now.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
Welcome back to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. Don't forget, you can find Mr. Bubka on Twitter at Bob Bubka, V-O-G, the V-O-G, appropriately for Voice of Golf. I'm on the old Twitter at STL Golf Geek, where I always like talking to Darren over the pond, who listens to our podcast and is always trying to make the right picks. Well, that's what Tiger's going to do, try and make the right picks for the President's Cup. Will he pick himself? That's going to be something that'll be talked about. And that's one question Bob had with our friend Alex Maselli.
With me now in the Grow Room with Bob and Jay, Alex Maselli, founder and publisher of Morning Read. Alex, just back from Wentworth, the PGA Championship, a huge event on the European Tour. And Danny Willett, who 2016, Alex, you know, wins the Masters, then falls off the face of the earth, but he seems back now.
Yes, he does. I mean, Bob, he fell to over 400 in the world after winning the Masters. You don't really see that very often. And then in turn, you don't really see guys making this huge move back up. But Danny Willett now top 31 in the world after the win at Wentworth. And, you know, you just wonder what's next, because obviously he can play. You know, he's won a major, won the flagship event in Europe, so he can play. The question is, will he continue to be able to play? And I think you have to add into all of this, he had some physical issues, back issues that really constrained him to a large extent. And I think that you have to add that into the equation as well. But still, being able to come back from falling off the planet is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, Alex, and what makes it even more remarkable, only two players in history have won the championship at Wentworth and the Masters. So he joined Sir Nick Faldo in some pretty elite company.
Two Englishmen. Well, you know, you have to factor this in as well. I mean, when you really look at it, there's been a European resurgence over the last 30 years at the Masters, but I mean, it's not like it's a huge resurgence. And then you figure, you know, because of the scheduling, a lot of these guys didn't even used to play in the BMW, because when it was in May and it was up against a lot of tour events that they didn't want to miss. But now being in September, not only did you see a lot of guys that you would expect to see from the European Tour there, but you saw Americans there. I mean, Finau was there, Reed was there, Billy Horschel was there. So you saw guys that you maybe wouldn't have seen in the past. And I think this is kind of a movement that you're going to see more and more of if the schedule stays the same. You're going to see more Americans playing in these events.
With us now, Alex Maselli, founder, publisher of Morning Read. One other thing that's popped up a little bit, Tiger Woods on a blog kind of indicating that it seemed to me, the way I read it, leaning more to being a playing captain when we get down to Australia in December. Your feelings on that?
Well, I can look at it many different ways. First of all, I think if you're Ernie Els, you have to be very, very happy if Tiger is actually considering teeing it up in the President's Cup. Because if you looked at what he did in the last cup he was in, I think he was 0-4. You know the fact that he's going to be playing in the skins game in Japan, then playing in Japan, then flying all the way back to the Bahamas to play in his event, then turn around, jump on a plane, and fly all the way back there to the President's Cup. So if you're Ernie Els, you have to be thrilled if Tiger is actually suggesting that he is going to be a playing captain. Secondly, he indicated earlier that he would listen to his players and see what they thought about him becoming a playing captain. I'd like to know which one of the eight would suggest that Tiger shouldn't be a playing captain. So, all of this fal-de-ral comes down to, if Tiger decides he wants to be a playing captain, he's going to be a playing captain. And I personally think that he is arrogant enough that he will be a playing captain. And I think the handwriting is on the wall if, in fact, he does that.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
Thanks for spending some time in the Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.